Hello, Soul Family, and welcome to the Soul Goddess Podcast. My name is Aishwarya. I am a mystic, healer, coach, and music artist. We are walking into a pivotal golden age on Earth, and it's time to cultivate the art and science of elevating your consciousness to extraordinary levels. Imagine having the most profound relationships, tapping into your divine guidance, embracing your true soul design, and unlocking supernatural abundance through your innate gifts. Those are the conversations we will be having twice a week, every Wednesday and Thursday, and we will have episodes that will nourish your spirit and expand your horizons. Don't forget to subscribe and become a part of our ever-growing soul family, and expect to meet incredible guests who will bring their unique wisdom and experiences to the table. And on other episodes, it will just be me and you. Remember, you're more than a listener to me. You are family. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Soul Goddess Podcast. Today, I have such a special guest, Ali Hendry. She is an ICF certified holistic relationship coach working with LGBTQ plus women, trans and non-binary folk. She coaches individuals, duos and groups. Ali is education director for Radiant Coaches Academy and course lead on the ICF Relationship Coach Training Certification. She is a TEDx speaker, and you know, her talk, Survivor's Guide to Jealousy, has been very popular. And she writes the relationship column for Diva Magazine, the largest LGBTQ plus women's magazine in the world. Ali started her career as a research psychologist and university lecturer, and continues to provide relationship education to her coaching community. She also advises wellness businesses in the area of inclusion and allyship. Ali lives in Brighton, UK, and works internationally. Welcome, Ali.
Thank you so much. What a lovely intro. Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So today we're going to talk about menopause.
Certainly are.
Yeah, we're going to talk about menopause. We're going to just dive right into it and talk about what you wish you would have known before your own menopause journey, the symptoms of menopause, just so much. So it's something that people would want to know, whether they're approaching that age of menopause or even, you know, beforehand. It's always really useful to know the journey that you would potentially be going on. So, you know, that's really important. So first of all, let's just go into, why are you, first of all, like, doing work around menopause? Like, what is the significance to you personally?
I went through menopause at the age of 51, which is actually bang on the average age in the UK to have menopause. And when we talk about menopause, it's not an exact science, in terms of, there aren't, people think that when you start your menopause journey, when you start getting some changes, which is perimenopause, they think that you can go and get some kind of test or measure done. But actually, one of the main things that happens around menopause is the reduction in estrogen. And people who go through menopause, their levels of estrogen fluctuate, you know, over the course of a month. When we have our cycles, those hormones will alter. So it's really difficult to go and say, right, can you test my levels of estrogen to see if I've started menopause? Because they are constantly going up and down. We do know that they reduce by 90% over the course of our menopause journey. So that is a significance. And we can talk a little bit about all the things that estrogen is responsible for. But menopause itself, the measure is, you haven't menstruated, you haven't had a period for 12 months in a row. And I was in the middle of lockdown when that happened. And I was already doing a lot of practices, wellness practices, that I realized in hindsight were supporting my own menopause journey, because I've had a relatively easy ride. And in fact, the stats say that there are around 25% of people will be like myself, where actually, yes, a little bit of hot flushes. The main change has been not having periods. And that's 25%. So the 75% who do get more of the changes, which we can go into if we want to, in that 75% of people that get more changes, only a quarter will get the severe changes that we hear about in the media, because obviously that's what sells, you know, the stories.
Yeah.
So while I was going through my menopause journey, I was doing a little bit of research, and there was a part of me that really wished that I had done that research beforehand so that I could feed into that journey and make sure that I was doing the practices, doing the living in a way that would support that journey. And so I wanted to help spread awareness around it. And I'm now working for a charity developing a training course that goes into organizations and helps them look at their policies, procedures and practices to support people that go through menopause. So it's very much become part of my life. And you know, education is so important to me, as well as the work I do as a coach, helping people help themselves. So it kind of all comes into that.
I think that's so incredible that, you know, you are doing that, because I also would love to see a world where organizations just help women who are, you know, menstruating as well, because I know that on the 3 to 5 days that I menstruate, I just want to honor my body and like listen to my body and go inward. And I, you know, I'm lucky to be able to do that because I work for myself. But I remember the times that I wasn't, I was like, this is just not how it's supposed to be. And it's not actually, you know, in certain ancient cultures like Indian culture and stuff, you wouldn't do anything on those days.
Yeah. And it's a really good point that people who menstruate have already experienced during their monthly cycle some of the changes that get attributed to menopause. And so if we can take, we can get more education out of that and say, actually, rather than labeling something, oh, it's the menopause, oh, yeah, you're going through the change, aren't you? Actually, people who menstruate have already experienced some of those things, like the brain fog, like the, you know, uncomfortable penetration, like the changes in hormones. So some of us are already familiar with it. And yet when we enter menopause, suddenly all those things, you know, become attributed to our mental health and well-being, when actually they've been there at different points during our cycle. And indeed, when we talk about those changes, people who don't menstruate also go through some of those changes due to age. You know, we get memory loss as we get older. We put on weight in different weird and wonderful places. We have changes and fluctuations in hormone levels. So we have increased anxiety. You know, estrogen has a big relationship with cortisol, the stress hormone. And so when estrogen levels go down, cortisol isn't controlled in the same way. And so that's where the anxiety can come in when you are going through menopause. All of those things can come as a result of life, as a result of getting older, having different responsibilities, whether you are someone who is menstruating before or not. So it is worth looking at the workplace being more compassionate to people, yes, absolutely, who are menstruating, and making sure that there are policies around those who enter that menopause. And also looking at the wider benefits of people who don't go through menopause, and yet are experiencing some of those quite debilitating changes.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So we have mentioned a few symptoms of menopause. What are the others that, you know, you were talking about? Because you're the kind of 25% that you felt that you didn't have, you know, too much of a bad time. And then the media, as you say, uses the other 25%. So what's the kind of spectrum of other symptoms that somebody could experience?
Yeah. So some of them are more common than others. Some of them get more press than others. And I think one of the things that we can start thinking about initially is thinking of menopause as a natural stage in life. It's not an illness. It's not a diagnosis. It's a natural season that we enter. And so sometimes using words like symptoms can be unhelpful, rather than saying let's look at changes, because if we start to medicalize it, then we take away ownership. We create something that is a simple, natural part of aging. So when we think about some of those things that can come up, We know that with perimenopause, which is where we start to get some of those changes, that happens between the age of 46 to 52 on average. It is 2 years earlier, generally, for Black and Indigenous populations. There is more and more research, thankfully, coming up around that.
Okay.
Sadly, there's hardly any research on trans men and non-binary folk and menopause. Hopefully, okay, there will be that forthcoming so that we can be more inclusive as we approach this topic and think about how it impacts us as lovers, as, you know, work colleagues, etc.
Yeah.
So, as I said, the average age is 51 and we've got that big drop in estrogen. And estrogen is responsible for things like brain function, bone density, weight gain, and anxiety. So some of those changes that can come in, we know about things like the hot flushes, which can last seconds. Some people get two or three a day. Some people might get 40, 50 a day. For myself, I get one or two a day, and they just feel like your body has turned up a heater very quickly and then turned it right down. And you can look at points in your day. Sometimes there are, for me, there are points in my day where I'm more aware of them because the world is quiet. So I'm more aware in the evening. Sometimes I can catch it, and I don't know if this is true for others, whereby I can feel it coming on and then I can do some breathing, tune into my body, and I can calm it. So there are some things that I've found that I can train myself, because when you're getting hot flushes and say you're in the middle of a business meeting and you know, you are getting distracted, then you can look at ways to support that. You can look at ways of how others can recognize, actually, we need to open the window, or how you can help yourself, starting to wear layered clothing that helps with taking off those layers and putting them back on.
Yeah.
Some people who've got the more severe changes, they might experience urinary tract infections, painful penetration. And this is because the estrogen reduction makes your vaginal tissues thinner and drier and less elastic. You can get heart palpitations. You can get things like altered spatial awareness. It is worth remembering, though, that everyone's menopause journey is different. And start to get curious. This, for me, was the biggest gain as a relationship coach who deals with mindset. One of the things that I was really clear that I wanted to do was to enter menopause with a big pile of curiosity. What is my body doing right now? What is my body capable of? How is this body that I've known for 51 years going to serve me now? What can I, you know, do to support this body now? And I'm 54 now, and certainly I'm so pleased that I went into that saying, actually, let me look at what is the art of the possible instead of focusing on what it used to be able to do. And we know that there are differences in terms of how people experience menopause that are tied into our genes, that are tied into our environment, tied into our lifestyle. So some of those things you can control and some of those things you can't. And I think that's the second thing that I found really useful entering menopause. It's the serenity prayer. Grant me the knowledge to know the things I can change and the things I can't change, and the wisdom to know the difference. And if I can enter with that sense, then I'm able to look at those areas that I do have agency and will support my own menopause journey.
Could I just ask, is there anything else that you know about those differences, like the genes, the environment and the lifestyle? Like, how does that actually impact if we just look at each one?
I hope that you are loving this episode, and I wanted to just take a quick minute to give you something super exciting, a free ticket to the 25-day Finally Feel Free virtual retreat. This is not an ordinary event. It is a sacred global sanctuary designed to support, elevate, and celebrate your unique journey. Me and over 50 visionary speakers will be diving into the realms of quantum health and wellness, unlocking wealth through your natural gifts, exploring a new form of divine love, and elevating to higher states of consciousness to create and experience your soul destiny. Don't miss this beautiful opportunity. Sign up. The link is in the show notes below. And now back to our episode.
Yeah, absolutely. We know from research that there are some things that we can do that will support some of those changes. There are things that can help with the hot flushes. There are things that can help with the reduced bone density that comes with menopause, the help with the weight loss and the brain function and memory. So if we take each of those and have a look at these areas, because what we're talking about is the physical changes, the emotional aspects, and also the communication. And as a relationship coach, when I'm working with dyads or individuals who are going through menopause and it's affecting their intimacy, we explore those three areas. We look at what are the physical changes that I can work on and control and move into a space that I feel comfortable with. What are the emotional aspects that need some resourcing now? And what's happening with my communication around it to my partner or partners? Mm. And so when I went into menopause, I was already doing things that were supporting my journey without even realizing that I was supporting them. I read this fantastic book called Menopause Boot Camp, which we can put in the show notes. That really helped me look at things. So this was written by Dr. Suzanne Gilberg-Lenz, and she looks at it from westernized and eastern approaches to menopause, and I found it fascinating. And also sort of other research as well, and talking to other professionals. So with the hot flushes, reducing smoking, reducing caffeine, reducing alcohol. Now, I've been alcohol free for 9 years. I've never smoked. And I've been caffeine free for about 4 years. So that was already happening. I was like, yay to me. Regular massages. There's been a lot of research around massages and how that can bring us back into our body. It can help with those hot flushes. I was already having regular massages as part of my own wellness practice. As someone who's a holistic relationship coach, I need to make sure that I am the best me that I can be for my clients. So one of those things is budgeting for regular massages. Having things like cotton sheets and well-aired bedrooms and rooms. These are practical things that you can do to help with those hot flushes. Then when we talk about the reduced bone density, so one of the main things that you'll read is around that strength training. I've been doing yoga for a very long time. I added to my yoga Pilates, which brings in a little bit more of the strength training side. So that's an area that you can look at. Gardening as well, anything where you are doing weight-bearing aerobic exercises, so things like walking or dancing or going up the stairs, all of those things can support that reduced bone density and bring in more muscle strength to help with that reduction in bone density. And of course, that ties into the other areas, which is weight loss and brain function. We know that brain function, reading, drinking lots of water for brain function. 75% of our brain is water. Having that healthy diet, and brain function also can be supported around coordinated movement. For example, going to yoga classes, or there's apps. You know, Down Dog app you can purchase and go through 2 or 3 minutes a day. I mean, start small. Start in a way that's going to support you. And then that weight loss, of course, being around some of those ways that you will move with intention. We know that it helps with mental health and well-being. It's one of those things that it's ironic that as soon as, you know, people who experience menopause get to a stage where, well, for me, certainly, I was like, I accept this body. It's taken me a while. But I'm now, you know, late 40s, early 50s. I accept this body and I love it. And I love this body. And just as you start to accept it, it changes. And so we're back to kind of thinking, all right, okay, I need to look at how do I move with intention? How do I change some of the things I was doing before? Now, I was a big runner doing half marathons, marathons, 10Ks, etc. And I moved into spin classes, because spin classes bring community and belonging, which is really important to reach out in that way when you're going through these changes. It brings in dopamine, because the one that I go to, they've got loud music and flashing lights and you feel like you're in a disco. And that for me has totally lifted the way that I embrace moving with intention. So don't get stuck doing the same thing in the same way. You're going through changes. You deserve to look at things that are going to work best for you now. So get curious, find out what's out there, do your research, get yourself a coach to help you with that transition, because goodness me, it's a big one.
Wow. So we covered the lifestyle. And what about the genetics? Because I know you mentioned indigenous, and what was the other?
Black and indigenous populations. There's research coming up around that.
Yeah. So is there any other research for other kind of races or that you're aware of at this present time?
Not that I'm aware of at this time. Some of us, we do look at that kind of stereotype, is to say, well, how did my mother go through this? What were her symptoms? And actually, less than 50% of how you'll experience it is the same as how your parent will experience it. So we coming back to that area again and saying, this is such an original journey. This is your journey. So take control of it. If you are going to start moving with intention in different ways, do speak to a medical professional, speak to your menopause expert in your local clinics, get the information. Gather that information. So in terms of the genetics, it's not always a sure sign to look at what your relatives have gone through. And of course, for some of us, we don't have that. I mean, for example, my mother had menopause early because she had her ovaries removed. And so her journey was a medical menopause. That's what she experienced. So I didn't have that comparison anyway.
Okay, interesting. So how do people, we have covered a little bit about this, but how do people actually just start preparing for it? Because you said, I think just having a healthy lifestyle in general and just like focusing on your wellness from early is going to contribute massively to it. Like how you explained with the caffeine, alcohol, smoking, getting massages, all of that kind of stuff. But how else can people prepare for it? Not just physically, but also emotionally.
Yes. Yeah. There's the emotional aspect and there's a communication aspect as well. With the emotional aspects, get that psychological support. Now is the best time to do that. You're going through a lot of changes. Your identity is changing. I mean, goodness, society puts a huge impact on the worth of people who menstruate being because you can create children. That's your place in the world. And so for some people, when that's taken away, if that was available to them, of course, that's not available to everybody. If that was available to them, there can be this feeling of less than. There can be this, what's the point of me? I've been desexualized. I don't have a purpose or a use anymore. And of course, there's unhelpful narratives that come out of that as well in terms of those body changes. Oh, the way that, the way that, as we said earlier, the way that penetrative sex might become more uncomfortable. So we become less useful. And so now is a really good time to look at that psychological support from friends, from communities, find those online communities, find those groups, research those podcasts, family members, friends, therapists and coaches. All of those people are there to serve you and your journey. The other emotional aspects, we touched on it a little bit, was around body image and how we can, like you've said, focus more on that physical well-being. Now is the time to focus on yourself, prioritize yourself so that you can keep supporting those around you. It is that analogy of the self-care with the gas mask. Put your gas mask on first so that you can best support yourself and therefore those around you. We have to come to that. The self-esteem side around the emotional aspects, that shame of menopause, as we know from the work of Brené Brown, shame reduces when you put a spotlight on it. And that's one of my drivers for doing this work around menopause. If I'm going on a date with someone or I'm talking to somebody and I get a hot flush or I'm talking about some work that I'm doing, I will talk honestly and openly and confidently, because that's how I feel at the moment around my menopause journey. I'll mention it. And sometimes people will be surprised. Other times people might be having a really difficult ride with their own menopause and they might not want to mention it. So it's worth looking at who you speak to and how you speak about it and bringing it into that, space where it's okay to mention menopause. When we talk about self-esteem, other things that we can focus on are what activities are you not doing that you used to love? What are those things that can give you that sense of joy and excitement? Can you bring some of those hobbies or that activities back? I like to use daily affirmations. That's another area for improving that self-esteem. James Clear in his book Atomic Habits talks about habit stacking, whereby if we're bringing in a new wellness program or process or routine, we stick it to something we already do. So for me, I wanted to do more affirmations. And I was looking at, what do I do every day where I can say my affirmations? And with habit stacking, it doesn't take any more time or energy. You're just linking it with something you already do. And I was like, huh, I make my bed every day, put my scatter cushions on, decorate it, do all I need to do. It takes, you know, 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Or maybe 3 or 4 minutes. Wait a minute. If I do my affirmations while I'm making my bed, that will remind me, it becomes attached to it. I will do it every day. And we need to make those affirmations personal and positive and in the present tense. It's the three P's, as I call them. So things like, I am loved. I am emotionally healthy. And we know from the work of Law of Attraction that that calls in those areas. It brings them closer. And it might be that actually for some of us, we need to make our affirmations more gentle. So we can't go straight with it, I am loved. So give yourself a break. Bring them in more gently. Say something like, I am working on being loved, or I am working on my emotional health. And those areas can help with that self-esteem. And then the third area around communication, when we're looking at how do we prepare for menopause? I mean, this is like any topic, right? Work on being open and honest with your partner. We know that shame is reduced, as we've said, when we shine a light on it. Talk about your feelings and your worries. Find a space where it's safe to do that. Find your people, your person, your group that you can share those areas with. And carry out research together with your partner or partners. View it as a shared journey that you embark on as a team. This is paramount when we're working on how dyads, couples can work on their menopause journey. It's not one person's issue. It's part of your relationship. You went into this together. These changes, as any changes with any partner, work on them as a team, be collaborative, and that can really help smooth the journey.
Yeah. And for our last segment of our podcast, I just want to go a little bit deeper with, you know, intimacy and how, like, what ways does menopause impact a couple's intimacy, and how can partners support someone going through the menopause?
It's a great question. There are things that you can do, absolutely, because when we look at intimacy and how menopause can impact it, there are lots of changes happening. So there's the body changes, the weight gain, the self-esteem, potentially. There's the painful sexual penetration. There's the exhaustion, the anxiety, the brain fog, those things that happen as we age anyway, regardless of whether they get attributed to menopause or not. And then there's those societal stereotypes of being useless, unable to be supportive to capitalism anymore because you're not producing, you know, anyone, paying audience. So in terms of how you can support your partner, as I said, supporting your partner by conceptualizing it as a shared journey or teamwork. And it's a great time to check in with various elements of your relationship and see what's working and what needs altering or updating, if not now, when. So get curious about each other and your own self-knowledge. Really do tune into what's going on for you. What are your needs? What are your wants? What's coming up for you? So a few areas you can think about. What's your love language? Have you ever done the love languages test? How does that feature in your relationship? When I start a relationship with somebody, I like to create relationship books, little notebooks. And in those books, we write information for each other that we know about ourselves. And there's a test that you can do, or you can check it out, Google love languages. And there are, I mean, the test identifies five. There are far more love languages. So expand your approach to love languages. Love languages can be things like acts of service, words of affirmation, giving gifts, physical touch, and quality time. Look at how those show up in your relationship. We love, quite often we show our love in the way that we want to receive it. And actually, our partner or partners might want to receive it in a different way. So check in with how you might be doing the dishes and thinking, well, this is me showing my love. And your partner is thinking, you never say, I look nice today. You know, so you've got a mixed match love language. You've got someone who's saying, I love acts of service, so that's what I'm going to do for you. And you've got someone else saying, but I love words of affirmation, and that's what I wish to receive from you. So look at your love languages. Look at your sexual design. This is an area that comes up a lot. I'm a lesbian and I'm non-monogamous. And within those communities, we talk a lot about sexual design, how it shows up in terms of our attraction. How are we attracted to others? Some people are demisexual, so they have to establish a emotional connection before they can get intimate. Are you aromantic? Therefore, in terms of not valuing, not feeling a sense of romance in relationships, are you sapiosexual? So what you find attractive is somebody's mind and their intelligence, and the list goes on. So have a look at your sexual design or your attraction style and see, and it can change in relation. It doesn't, just because you've got the one doesn't mean that it's going to stay for the whole of your relationship. Get curious, get curious. What's your attraction style? Can also be around aesthetics or olfactory. Some people, smell is really important in terms of how attraction shows up. Is it emotional? Is that your attraction style, or physical? So really do delve into that. There's been a lot of work on types of desire as well. And this is a really important area when we're talking about how can I support my partner? How can I get more knowledge about me when it comes to intimacy? So we know that there's at least two types of desire. There's spontaneous and there's responsive. And Emily Nagoski, in their brilliant book, Come As You Are, talks about those two areas. With spontaneous desire, the arousal comes first. This is the one that gets all the media coverage, the bodice ripping, I'm ready, take me now, switched on from the get-go. And that's how we conceptualize desire. Actually, there's a large part of people that are responsive in their desire. They want the conditions created first to promote that arousal. So with spontaneous, the arousal's there, we're ready, let's go, we're switched on. Whereas for some people, in fact, a larger percentage, there's responsive desire, whereby we create the conditions, we curate an environment where we promote that arousal. So find out what your desire type is. And defining sex, we know from the statistics, there is something called the orgasm gap, where 95% of heterosexual men orgasm in sex, cisgender men, 65% of heterosexual women orgasm in sex. And this is because we're sold this narrative that sex is penetrative. That is the aim of sex. And yet for people who have vaginas and clitorises, clitoral stimulation is the main way that, people will have orgasms. And so when we look at how sex is conceptualised, it's not set up for cis women. for our pleasure. Now, of course, pleasure isn't just about orgasm. Pleasure is about our senses and our enjoyment and the journey and how we engage with our partner or partners. So we can expand that, define what sex is, the physical, the emotional, spiritual. What does that mean now? Again, we go back to that curiosity. How can we conceptualize our sex now? Do we think of it more as pleasure? What's the journey? Are we focusing too much on the outcome and not enough on the journey? I really do have a quite tough conversation about what sex means to you and how you would like sex to show up. When people want to have difficult conversations, what I tend to find helps is that rather than going straight in with the conversation, do a kind of preemptive conversation. So instead of saying, I want to talk about our sex life, which is, I mean, it's to the point. Sometimes it can be more helpful to say, how would it feel to have a conversation about our sex life? So it's almost like the precursor to having that conversation. And they might say, well, yeah, I guess so. Why is everything all right? And you might say, actually, I'd like us to look at how we experience pleasure and intimacy. When would be a good time for us to have that conversation? So plan that conversation, put value on it. It's always a great environment to do a walk and talk. When you're walking alongside someone, if that is available to you, of course, it's not available to everybody. B, being in a situation where you are in movement and you are traveling in the same direction, it's makes sense, right? You are traveling together. You are partnering with each other as you walk along or travel along. And it also means there isn't that intensity of staring at each other, trying to read each other's body language. So we're spending more time listening, listening to understand instead of listening to respond. So make sure that you're creating that environment to have those conversations. You know, we've got this amazing opportunity as we enter menopause to redefine sex, people. Why not do it? Research together. Have a look at erotic stories. Look at books and podcasts. Communicate your yes, your maybes, your no's. Now could be the time to explore kink. There's a brilliant book called 101 Kinky Things Even You Can Do by Kate Sloan. And what you can do is use that book as a conversation starter. One of you goes through the book and marks the yes, maybes, and no's for each of those 101 things. You pass it to your partner. They go through it and they mark their yes, maybes, and no's. And you use it as a basis for your conversation, because how do we start a conversation if for 20 years we haven't really talked seriously about intimacy? Explore things like tantra. And maybe you want to visit a sexological body worker to explore more about what sex means, how it shows up in your body, what intimacy means, how it shows up for you. So quite a few things to think about.
No, it's really good stuff. I mean, I love, you've listed out the books that we can put down below in the show notes, but also I love the walking and talking thing, because that's something I do a lot with my friends or like on the phone. And there's always, you know, the way you, and I, for me, I was like, oh, maybe it's because I love nature and I'm just with my friend. But actually, what you said is so valid, because you're not looking at each other and trying to, yeah, that was a, you know, a real aha moment. So that's a great way to have these kind of conversations.
So powerful. And those of us who are holistic and we believe in body, mind, and spirituality, and that we are a beautiful blend of those three things, connecting with nature while you're having these important conversations is absolutely paramount. My higher power is the great outdoors. It is nature for me. And I think when we are talking about intimacy, it's important to focus on preparation. There can be a lot of shame around this. People say, well, it should be spontaneous. I refer you to what we talked about earlier. It could be spontaneous. It could be responsive. So actually, yeah, of course you need to plan to have good intimacy. I mean, right, here's the analogy. If you've bought tickets to a concert 6 months in advance, do you enjoy that concert any less because you bought the ticket 6 months in advance? No, of course you don't. In fact, there's anticipation, there's excitement, there's the build-up. So why don't we think about that the same way when we're talking about sex? Because actually, when we go into that place of, what does preparation look like when it comes to sex? Managing expectations, setting our intentions, curating that desire, bringing in flirting, people. Come on now. And again, if you haven't flirted for years, think about the way of having that conversation before you have the conversation. Instead of saying, I want us to flirt more, discuss, you could say, how would it feel to have a conversation about flirting? You know, you could even start with a little raised eyebrow as you're having that conversation. So bringing in flirting, recognizing that planning means that you care and it can stimulate anticipation. Hello. And going for that place where pleasure is not a performance. And within your preparation, I would also say bring in aftercare. Aftercare is a phrase that's used in kink. And it says when we have finished this really connecting, intimate, vulnerable situation, what are we going to do that holds us and grounds us together, having experienced this? So have a conversation about what aftercare can look like. And it could just be lying there in each other's arms, enjoying each other's closeness, tuning into the heat, the smells, the sights, the sounds. It could be having a drink together, a warm drink together, creating a meal, watching a movie, going for a walk, put your clothes on first. So, you know, there's things to think about around that aftercare that can be really important.
Yeah, wow. Well, we're looking at menopause in a completely different way. You know, I love the whole mindset change that occurs throughout this conversation, because of if we don't explore it in this way, then we do just fall, you know, we can just fall into those like stereotypes, what we're told, all of these things. So yeah, this has been really comprehensive to just prepare for it, to know what we could be experiencing, you know, as we approach the age for menopause, but also people who might not physically experience menopause, as you say, they could also experience these things just because of age and just like, yeah, emotional kind of, I don't want to say symptoms, but just experiences and all of that. So yeah, thank you so much, Ali. And like, what is what is next for you in your, because I know you're a coach, and we will put your website down below, www.alihendry.co.uk. But what are you, you know, up to these days?
What am I up to? I'm focusing on promoting my certified relationship coach training course. That launches every 3 months. It follows a 3-monthly cycle. So it's a 12-week online program. It's a mix of videos and also live Zooms. So there's 50 hours of training, half of them are videos, half of videos and self-work that you do, and half of them are Zoom training. It's fantastic. It's a fantastic course. If you are interested in coaching, obviously a relationship coaching is fantastic. What I've found is the cohort have changes in their relationship. So what I'm getting now are trainees that are coming along because they want to improve their own romantic relationships, romantic and sexual relationships. They're learning so much about themselves. There's so much content in there, all sorts of topics, heartbreak, trust, commitment, talk about sex and menopause, sexual orientations, every imaginable topic. And people are going through that and realizing it's a real powerful journey. They're having conversations with their partners that they've never had before. So I'm focusing on the relationship coach training. It's ICF, International Coaches Federation certified, which is fantastic. So it means that we are held accountable under that board, because there are lots of other coaching establishments that just pop up. So I'm very proud to be doing that work. As I said, I'm working with a new charity and going into organizations, developing a menopause training program. And just focusing really on my one-to-one clients, dyad clients. I work with couples who are entering non-monogamy. That's a big topic that comes up. What's it like when we enter non-monogamy? How do we navigate the changes in our relationships, the complete overhaul that happens in our relationships? So lots of exciting things.
Okay, great. Well, we'll put all of that down below. And if anyone is interested in that, of course, you can go and check Ali out. Thank you so much for your time today.
Absolute pleasure. Love talking to you. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. Thank you for being here with us. Your presence here is a gift. To ensure you're always in tune with our latest explorations, subscribe to the Soul Goddess podcast so you're always notified of a new episode. Before we part ways for now, an exciting reminder to claim your free gifts waiting for you in the show notes. These are available for a limited time and they're crafted with love and intention just for you. Be wild, be free, and forever remain true to your authentic soul self. Until we meet again, sending you so much love and light.